Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Higher Dimension. And I am your hostess, Phyllis Pricer. Today we have an absolutely wonderful guest from England, and she's talking to us all the way from Great Britain, Anne Andrews, who wrote the story, Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None. This is a story about Anne and basically her son, Jason, who is, these people have had alien abductions, and they are just the most marvelous people. And this is a story of their gradual awareness of what has been happening in their lives and how it has affected them. Anne, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Phyllis. It's a pleasure.
I'm so glad. I hope I introduced it okay. There's a whole lot to say in there.
There is. Yeah, that was brilliant.
Okay, good. Anyway, today I have a little laryngitis, so my audience, and you will excuse me, if I suddenly disappear with a voice or squeak, I apologize, but it's the best I can do under the circumstances. But anyway, this is something that has fascinated me for a long time. I know that many people feel that abduction is a terrifying and horrific thing. Others, you know, are into really woo-woo stuff. And others, you know, they don't even want to consider it. But your story is really it's a very straightforward narrative about the experiences that your son had and the issues that your family had to grapple with to come to an awareness that indeed strange goings on were happening in his life. He wasn't telling fairy tales, and that you yourself have had this kind of experience, and indeed it seems to run in your family. Is this correct?
Yes, Phyllis, yes, that is correct.
Okay. Well, tell us how it started, and in your own words, you know, give us a story.
Okay. Well, please stop me if I go on too long, won't you? Okay, right, start at the beginning. I suppose things really sort of started happening just after Jason was born. We put him in his own room, in his own cot, and we would find that occasionally we would hear him cry, and we would go into the bedroom, and occasionally we would find him either at the other end of the cot or underneath the cot. Sometimes he was underneath a chair. He was always in the room, but he would be moved. You know, he would be moved from the cot, from the cradle. At the time, we you know, rationality sort of creeps in, as you know, as it should, and we decided that perhaps if our older son Daniel, who was 4 at the time, we thought, well, perhaps if he stands on a chair and stands on tiptoes, then he might just be able to reach the baby. But then again, you know, this sort of thing still carried on even when Daniel wasn't in the house, you know, or if he was in the same room as us, you know, it would still happen. I mean, this went on for several weeks, a couple of months at least. But then it just seemed to stop, you know, just seemed to stop of its own accord. So we just thought, oh well, it must have been Daniel, so you know, we won't worry about it again. But then,
and how old was the baby at this time? How old was Jason at this time?
At this time, he was just a few weeks old. He was just a few weeks out of the hospital. So, obviously we were very worried about, you know, what was happening.
Right.
But then, as I say, because it seemed to stop, you know, we just figured, well, you know, perhaps it was Daniel, and perhaps we got dates mixed up or something, and. So it's stopped now, so don't worry about it. But then when Jason started walking, when he could, you know, when he first began to talk, he would tell us about which we thought were nightmares at the time. He would tell us about being asleep in his room, and then he would tell us about little people that would come into his bedroom. He said they would come through the walls, through the floors. He said, and then he said he always found that, you know, he could look, he could see everything, but he couldn't move. He couldn't move at all. And he said they would make him, like fly with them. And he believed at the time that, they took him to what he called a hospital place, where they placed him on a table. And he said, you know, he always felt cold, that the table was cold to the touch. And he was absolutely petrified, you know, he was terrified. As I say, this did for quite a few years, and, you know, for a long, long time, we would just obviously hug him and tell him it's okay, you know, Mummy and Daddy's here, and believing it, it was nothing but, you know, really bad sort of childhood nightmares.
Okay. And when did you begin to, did you experience things yourself? And when did you become really aware of what was going on with you?
I only, in my childhood, my own childhood, I only had one episode that I could remember very, very clearly. It was when I was about, I suppose about 7 or 8, I remember sort of waking up during the night and not being able to get back to sleep. I know that my dad was on night work, so he wasn't in the house, and I asked my mom if I could get into her bed, and of course she said that yes, I could. I tried snuggling down, but then, you know when you get that feeling that you know something isn't right, that something is there?
Right.
That's what happened, and I remember even at that age, sort of like, you know, trying to peek over the covers even though you don't want to. And I saw a figure at the bottom of the bed. It looked like, I suppose, you know, to a child, it resembled a monk, like it had the hood sort of over the head.
Oh, yes.
And it moved around the side of the bed. It didn't walk. It just seemed to, just move, if you like. That was the only, you know, the only recollection that I had for such a long time. But I do remember talking to my mum about it the next day, and she was adamant that I shouldn't discuss it with my dad. But again, you know, it was like history repeating itself, because I remember her holding me and hugging me and saying, "Oh, it's only a bad dream, it's a nightmare." And I was so angry because I knew it wasn't. So
yes.
You know, sort of on reflection, I can only sort of, you know, understand now what Jason must have been thinking.
Well, that's probably where you got the words to tell him not to worry, it's only a nightmare, because that's what you were probably, you know, comforted with at your young age. So,
yes, I was.
History has a tendency to repeat itself in many ways.
So it does.
So as he got older, and when did the time come, there, you said there was a gradual awakening to there with something really, really going on, and when did you come to really accept that strange stuff was going on? And tell us also that was happening with government people coming around and you know, talking to you and that type of thing.
Okay. Well, I suppose we you know, it took us 12 years actually to, you know, to get to the point where you know, we said that this was a possibility. I mean, before that we'd take it, because Jason persisted in this for, you know, for years, all of his growing up.
Right.
And, you know, we decided that, you know, obviously that there must be, you know, some sort of perhaps, you know, medical problem. And, you know, we took him to various clinics, hospitals. He was tested for sleep epilepsy, brain disorder, you name it, he had it. We took him finally to a psychiatrist. Because we totally believed in, you know, in the medical profession, because we wanted someone to say to us, "Oh, this is the problem. This is what's happening. You know, here's the medication." We never got that. All we ever got from the psychiatrist was a letter stating categorically that he is not psychotic in any way. And she said to us, you know, what he's saying is the truth.
Wow.
And I suppose, you know, that's what started us thinking. And then obviously that, you know, that sort of, I suppose that was like the catalyst, you know, that led us on to other things. Because it was almost like, you know, once we started thinking, well, maybe there's something to this, you know, to what he's saying, that's when he actually started disappearing from the house, you know, during the night. You know, I remember sort of, it was terrifying, you know. I mean,
I was just going to say, if that had been my child, you know, I would have been this side of hysterical, thinking that the child had been kidnapped.
Well, exactly, but I mean, we couldn't understand it because we have sort of, we've always had very, very large dogs. You know, we have a large breed of dogs, and there were always at least two or three dogs in the house. You know, the house will be locked and bolted from the inside. So of course, you know, we just, I mean, obviously, the first time my husband discovered that he wasn't in his bed, you know, we just thought, oh, well, he's gone downstairs, or, you know, and so, of course, you start looking, and then you start panicking, and then a bit more, and then you start looking in ridiculous places where, you know, there's no room for a 12-year-old to hide anyway.
you know, under cupboards, you know.
Well, exactly, yes, yeah. We were, you know. It was just ridiculous, you know. And then, of course, you know, my husband said, well, you know, that's it. I'm calling the police. I don't know what's going on, but, you know, we've got to do something. And it was, I don't know, for whatever reason, but I just suddenly said, you know, look, go down to the gardens and you know, let's check the shed. Which, again, was padlocked from the outside. And, you know, when we opened it, you know, because I was in system, but we opened it, and there he was, sound asleep in the corner. So,
all of a sudden he's been able to materialize and dematerialize through walls. This is a great gift.
it would be if you shared it. But obviously, we're
I know.
You know, at the time, I mean, you know, your heart's pounding, and I was crying. I was like, oh my God, you know, because you hear so many things, and
that can happen,
you know,
to children.
We do have to be, well, exactly, yes, yeah. You were absolutely terrified.
My youngest daughter has said she has seen them, and she would come running into my room saying, they're coming after me again. And she climbed in the bed, and I'd say, who? And she says, the little people. And she said, but they don't come near you, Mom, so I'm staying here.
Oh, bless
you. You know, and the therapist kept saying, I took her to the therapist, and the therapist kept saying, you've got to let her sleep on her own. She's got to, and I kept saying, you try to oust her out of my bed in the middle of the night. This kid sticks to me like a bird to a saddle blanket.
I can appreciate it. I do know the feeling. We were exactly the same with Jason.
Yeah.
You know, it was, yeah, he just, you know, you couldn't, for love nor money, could not get him to sleep in his own room, in his own bed. And
right.
It ended up that, you know, we had to put like a little camp bed, you know, alongside ours. And I had to hold his hand, you know, until he dropped off to sleep, because that's the only way he would sleep.
The same thing with me and my daughter. You know, I finally, you know, I was getting zero sleep, so I just said, as long as she needs it, and she was about, I guess she was about close on six or five before she would be okay with sleeping alone again. And, you know, and every once in a while I'd try it, you know, just to see, but she'd say, no, they're coming after me, they're coming after me. I'm not going to stay in that room, they're coming after me. And so, you know, I decided, well, rather than argue, but it didn't. I can understand that. I can understand that. But it's been a while since that's happened. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you've had some other issues, too, where you started having strange people showing up at your house or camping out from your house or things of that nature that you feel perhaps were in combination with this.
Yes. We've had quite a lot of interference in that respect. It's sort of like, you know, when we moved from our farm in Kent, it was very strange, you know, that the way that we were actually, you know, moved from the property. You know, it was our property, belonged to us.
Right. And weren't you told you had to leave?
That's correct. Yes, because what we did for a living, we used to raise cattle. Mm-hmm. You know, so we used to buy like young calves at market, and you know, mm-hmm. which needed obviously a lot of attention. And we used to bottle feed them, and you know, until they sort of started getting older. And then mm-hmm. when they were old enough to be self-sufficient, you know, we'd sell them on to like the bigger farms.
Right.
But then we had an incident at the farm whereby, in a nutshell, we lost all of our stock. We lost all of the cattle died. We lost all of the poultry that we had, the sheep, everything. Everything died.
Was it disease or?
Well, this is the thing. We had, within sort of, within hours, we had people turn up from the ministry. They told us the Ministry of Agriculture.
Right.
They went around, obviously, you know, looking at everything. But they looked so strange because they were actually going around with some sort of Geiger counters, you know, as if they were like, I don't know, like they were more interested in the ground than they were anything else.
Huh.
But it wasn't long after that, actually, that we had a visit from our local council, and they basically said to us, well, as you have, you know, as you've lost your living, as you therefore forfeit the right to live on the land. So, you know, they said to us, look, you know, we're going to give you a house in the village, but it's only going to be for, you know, a few weeks, a few months at the most, and then uh-huh. as soon as, you know, you've restocked or, you know, whatever you want to do, then, you know, you can move back up here. We then spent the next 9 years in trying to get permission to live back on a property that actually belonged to us.
Uh-huh.
And we never made it. You know, we were literally warned in the end that, you know, we had children to consider and, you know, maybe we should stop trying so hard to, you know, win the right to live back on our own land.
And this is from this is bizarre.
It is, yeah.
But were you able to have an attorney look into this and find out why this was? It seems to me that this is a very strange situation.
Well, exactly. We didn't employ an attorney as such, but what we did, we went to a company that specializes in this sort of thing, because the laws are very sort of strange in England concerning you know, working on the land. We went to the company.
I guess it's different than America.
It is very different.
okay.
this guy that we employed, he's what's known as a land agent. He came and visited the farm, and he said, you know, why on earth can you not live here? You know, you've got all the buildings, the barns, everything. So we went through it, told him what happened, and he said, well, you know, the council's bang out of order, you know, don't worry about it, I'll have you back living on your land, he said, before Christmas, and this was about November.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't hear from him for ages. We finally went to his office, and I remember, you know, my husband refusing to move until he saw him. The guy finally came out and he just said to us, look, he said, I've been told, I've put feelers out, the message I've got back is, you have a family to consider, you have children to protect, he said, don't push this, he said, just walk away now, because there's some very big guns out for you, he said, and they will stop at nothing to make sure that you don't live on that property again. And obviously, as we had, we did rightly have, you know, young children, and we just, you know, heeded the warning.
I cannot, and to this day, who owns who has the property at this moment? Did they ever purchase it from you?
It now belongs, I believe, to the MID, the Ministry of Defense.
Did they ever compensate you for your land?
Well, we sold it. We did sell it, but we thought we were selling it to a private person.
Right.
But apparently, we understand from obviously friends that we still have there that the only things that it's used for is to park sort of army trucks and army vehicles. Everything else has been removed. So I don't know. You tell me what it's used for.
Sounds to me as though they felt that there was something on your property, though I can't think of anything that would be geologically useful in that particular area. Did you ever see UFOs out there and entities walking around on your property?
We've seen UFOs out there because the property that we owned was quite high up, but it was surrounded by thick woodland all the way around. But yes, we often used to see, strange things in the skies, and all this sort of thing. But the other thing was is that on one side of our borders, we were bordered by Ministry of Defense land.
Okay.
It was quite a regular thing to see these great big helicopters, come down into what looked like woodland, but obviously they were coming down into something. So that used to go on all the time. So whether I don't know that they had something to do with what happened to all of our animals or So I don't know.
Were you ever compensated for your animals?
No, never. No, we never got anything.
And nobody ever told you what they died of?
Well, and so we were told at the time that it was a very rare form of salmonella, which was strange in itself. And we actually got the letter, from the Ministry of Agriculture stating this. But it was some years later, as I said to you, it was one of our attempts to try and get back onto the property. And it was some years later when we got in touch with the Ministry of Agriculture and spoke to them about it. And the guy that we spoke to, he said, well, that's very strange because I would have been in that department at that time. He said, and I know nothing, absolutely nothing about this. He said that he would find out for us. But then when I tried to ring him a few weeks later, I was told that he no longer worked there. And we've never been able to find him since. The only thing that we did have was we had somebody else phone us, supposedly from the Ministry of Agriculture, and they said to us, we're going to look into this matter for you, but only if you send us the original letter, the original report. So I said, well, that's okay, I'll send you a copy. And they said, no, we want the original. Of course, I refused to send it to them. I've still got it to this day. I've refused to send it.
Of course.
Despite near enough being, threatened over it, And then we didn't hear any more. So, I don't know, there's definitely something, something very wrong about that, but.
Yes, I can agree. And so how has your son done with all of this? I understand he's grown now and he's married or?
Yes, he is married, yes.
And he has a career and he's a healer. He learned a great deal.
He's learned an awful lot. How can I put it? He doesn't make a career of it, obviously. He still has to, as he puts it, live in this world. So, cars are his career. He's absolutely car fanatic. He's married to an experiencer. Jacqueline is absolutely lovely, his wife. It all seems right, because as I say, that's how they met. He was trying to help her with you know, with her own experiences.
Uh-huh.
And they got married. And as I say that they've moved back to Kent. So, you know, that's one good thing.
I was going to say, is he still having these events where he is away?
Yes, he is. You know, Jacqueline has said to us that, you know, very occasionally now, she does find out that he's missing. But then he said to us that he doesn't need that so much now, because he said he's got to the point in his life where he's no longer afraid of what happens to him. I mean, he used to be absolutely terrified.
Of course.
You know, anybody would be. Exactly. But he tells us that, you know, that the day that we actually said, well, if you speak to Jason, you know, people mm-hmm. have said to him, Jason, you know, what was the turning point for you? Mm-hmm. He always says to people, it was the day my mom and dad said that they did really believe me.
Mm-hmm.
Because then he had total support and it wasn't just mm-hmm. words, it was actual, you know, real mm-hmm. support.
Right.
You know, I suppose at that time, you know, that's when he stopped and maybe thought about it and thought, well, I'm still here. I always come back. You know, maybe this isn't so bad and maybe I should sort of stop being so terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, once he did that, he started listening and he started learning.
Mm-hmm.
And he just went on in leaps and bounds. And as I say, now he's got to the point where he never refers to them as his adopters, but rather his friends.
Okay.
You know, and he sees them as equals. And that's how they seem to treat each other.
Okay.
You know, it's like he still knows when he's going to be taken. But it's like if it's not convenient, you know, he'll just say in his head, you know, not now. It's not a good time. And he'll get the reply, that's okay. You know, another time. So he's got this sort of, I suppose you might call it rapport with them. Exactly,
I think it sounds like an active communication. Was he taken for the purposes of being taught? In other words, when people are taken, they always feel like they're being used as specimens and what have you. But I think that what I read from your book and understand is that in this instance, Jason was really taken to be taught. And to get used to being with those of another universe, shall we say, another world, shall we say?
Yes, he was. You know, he got over the fear. You know, he was able to focus and he started to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's when he really started, you know, started to learn.
What did they teach him?
Well, he insisted that they didn't actually teach him, but rather they awakened him. You know, they awakened him to be who he really is.
Okay.
And you know, I said to him, well, you know, what is the difference? And he said I already knew. All of this stuff. He said, I already knew everything, you know. He said that they just basically sort of, you know, reminded me that
mm-hmm.
that is what I asked for and this is who I am.
Okay. And what does he say he is in his awareness and an awakening of the potentiality of who he is as a human being? Is that correct?
I suppose it would be correct, Phyllis. How can I put it? He's definitely a star child. You know, some of the things he says, you know, sort of go straight over my head, even now, you know, when you've got a 12-year-old sort of, you know, talking at you like this and, you know, it's just incredible sort of some of the information he was coming out with and, but some of the knowledge that, you know, that he had, it was just phenomenal.
Go ahead, honey.
Sorry.
That's all right. And we're having a bit of a lag in the communication here. I can hear it. I guess it's because it's transatlantic.
Ah, right.
Okay.
Okay.
So, There's just a bit of lag between when you're speaking and when I hear you. But go ahead, dear.
Oh, okay. Right. Where was I?
We were talking about what Jason is learning. What, for example, did he learn or remember?
He remembered, that, you know, he has the ability to astrally project.
Okay.
He can also astrally travel, which I suppose is another term for, like, out-of-body experiences, which, you know, a lot of people probably listening have experienced.
Right.
He also knows how to heal. He is quite an incredible healer. He said he prefers to do a lot of the work that he does on another level. He's able to travel dimensions. And he said he does a lot of work sort of, you know, out there. He's also, he tells me that, you know, him as well as other people, he's able to go to, like, the scene of, like, major accidents, and this sort of thing, where he said it's part of his job to be with people, you know, that are about to move on.
Pass over.
He said sometimes I'm there to try, you know, to help, to keep that person alive, until the ambulance arrives or, you know, help arrives. He said he does all these sorts of things and he's Jason.
he's your unique child.
he is. Well, but both my boys are unique, as all children are, you know. But he's just a little bit different. So.
And your other boy, the older one, how did he deal with all of this? Because it must have been very strange for him as well to have a brother doing this and to have these things going on. And how did he deal with this?
He dealt with it exceptionally well, actually, because it was just after Jason was born. That's when Daniel, our oldest son, started having an imaginary friend, or as we thought. He would always describe his friend as a spaceman in a white suit.
And we
would walk past his bedroom, and we would hear him laughing, you know. And of course, we go in the room and say, you know, what are you laughing at? And he'd just look at us and say, oh, well, thanks, Mum. You know, you frightened Eunice away. So as I say, we just obviously at that time, you know, just believed that it was just an imaginary friend.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was when Daniel was, I suppose, about seven that he came to us in tears one day, and he said to us, Eunice has told me that they've made a mistake and that Jason is the one they should be working with, and, you know, he won't see me for a while. And he was so upset about this, and I thought, well, he's talking about an imaginary friend. And then he said something very strange. He said, I asked him why, that they've made a mistake and they should be with Jason. He said to me, because Jason has an original soul. And of course, I mean, at 7 years, and Daniel's saying to him, what does that mean, Mum? And I didn't have a clue. So, I just passed over it, as it were, and just hugged him and told him, oh, you know, don't worry, I'm sure you've got loads of friends at school, and the sort of thing that, you know, you would do. Both boys are very different. I mean Daniel was never terrified, you know. These things did happen to him, but he, as I say, if you ever met Daniel, I mean, even now, he's so laid back. You know, if he was any more laid back, he'd be horizontal. He really would.
I've met people like that, yes, dear. We have them on both sides of the Atlantic.
Oh, you do? Oh, that's good.
Oh, yes. Okay. It's not exclusively in England.
Oh, it's not. Oh, that's good to hear.
Well, when I was little, I had imaginary friends, too. But they were about my own age. And that's not unusual, especially for only children, by the way. Usually.
Yes, that's what we thought. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, but mine were more age appropriate. And, you know, and they disappeared when I was about 11. And I remember one day being alone without having friends around, and I called them to me, and they came, but they weren't as strong as before. And I said, well, you know, why haven't you come? And they said, well, you're too old now, and this is the last time we'll play with you. And that was the last time I saw them. And it was very interesting. And but I used to tell my mother about my imaginary friends, and she did play along.
Which
was
very
nice.
Yes, yes.
Yes, which was wonderful because it gives validation.
Yes.
But yeah, it was very interesting. But I don't think they were quite like your sons. Although I've met some people since then who are, as I've told you, who I know definitely are of out of this world, so to speak. I don't know how to explain any better. I think it's just amazing how you managed to hold on to your sanity through all the things that you went to. I know having your husband as your partner must have been of a great comfort to you in all of that this went through, because it's enough to try your soul, quite frankly, especially when other people, you can't share it, or could you share it with people that you knew?
No, we couldn't. It was, I don't know, it's even now, you know, I mean, America is so much more open-minded than England. England is
really
very
open. I would have thought the opposite.
Yeah. Oh, no, not at all. No,
really?
No, it's just, as you say, yeah, you know, even now we have to be so careful, you know, who we talk to, you know, about anything on this subject, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Well, as I say, I mean, you know, just as an example, it's like, you know, a few years back, Jason actually lost his job because, you know, something came out about him in one of the local papers.
Right.
And then suddenly all the people that were his friends that he was working with, you know, suddenly didn't want nothing to do with him. And that they were actually frightened of him. And it got to the point where, because nobody would work with him, you know, through fear, you know, the boss just said, well, I'm sorry, Jason, but, you know, we're going to have to let you go because, you know, this is the situation, which was just so totally unfair. But,
oh,
yeah,
that's
unfortunate. It's the way it is in England, you know, unfortunately. And, I mean, we're only asked to go on TV shows, you know, just to have... you know, have fun poked at us, and which obviously we decline all the time. But
in other words, they invite you to make fun of you.
Well, to say that they've done it a couple of times, so you know we've just drawn the line under it now. And if we're asked, you know, we just say, well, no, sorry, you know, whether it's serious or not, you know, because they always promise it's going to be serious, and of course it never is. So. You know, we just don't entertain anything anymore. So, you know, that's England for you.
I think that is, quite frankly, a crying shame because, number one, I don't think there's anything to fear. That's my personal opinion. And the few times that I've had contact, they were very, very supportive of me in a period of time of intense anguish and pain for me. And I received contact from them, and I knew someone was helping me through a very, very bad time. I never knew who. And then years later, just after my beloved dog died, I saw a UFO right over Washington, D.C., and I just about drove into the Jersey Wall. Can anybody see this but me? You know, I mean, it's as big as you could be, you know. I mean, it was bigger than a baseball stadium, for God's sake. It was right there hovering over downtown D.C., and I'm saying, you know, I'm driving and trying not to run into the wall, and the entity there that I saw standing in the window, I would call it, that I could see, said, who do you think helped you? And I knew, I mean, this is mental telepathy, and I knew that he was talking, I assumed it was a he, it sounded like a male, let's put it that way, that he was talking about a terrible, terrible family crisis that I had gone through, and I had known someone was standing between me and my pain, and I was grateful for it, and the day that that barrier was lifted, I felt like, well, I don't want to go into it on the radio, but I felt the pain just horrifically hit me like a brick wall. So I knew what this entity talked about, and they had helped me through a very, very, very serious and dangerous crisis. And I was so very, very grateful. But that's, you know, and I've always never, ever feared contact. At first, I never believed it. And I'll tell you how they contacted me. Someone had told me that there was life, you know, outer space, and I said, yeah, well, my mother's from Missouri. Seeing is believing. Show me. Missouri is called the show me state. So I said, if there's anybody from outer space, they're going to have to show up on my front doorstep, folks. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so he did. And so he said, what did he say? Just before he did this, he said, seeing is believing. Now do you believe? That's why I almost drove to the Jersey Wall. I said, I see it, but I'm not believing it, you know?
Yeah.
But it was a heck of a way to get my attention, to be honest with you. You know, pretty easy, another way other than driving. You know, I don't want to cause an accident, you know, things like that. I laugh now, but I had a lot of fun, and I was terrified of telling my mother for sure, thinking she was going to take me away and put me in a little paddy wagon and have a nice little,
yeah,
you know, warm cup of milk with a little, you know, medicine in it.
Yeah.
You know the feeling, yeah.
Oh, I do.
So, you know, we are live on a broadcast. I noticed nobody has called in. I guess everybody has been listening, fascinated, as I am, to this story of your life, and not a story, but the recounting of the incidents that your family's encountered in your life. And I would say to the people, if you have questions, please, please feel free to call in and ask. If you have something to add, please do so. And I would also expect, since I know my audience, that they would do so with courtesy and respect, because that's how we treat people on this show. We accept what you have to say and we honor it. And there are so many things in heaven and earth that we just don't know. And I firmly believe that part of this is the contact that is coming and helping us become more used to this, so that we can in the future know this as a norm in life rather than an abnormal situation. And that these beings are here to help us through crises and for healing purposes, as you say, etc. And for that, you know, I do honor them, and I do respect what you have to say, because I think it's beautiful, and we should accept all the help we can get, for crying out loud. God knows we have need of it in so many areas. So I've just thrown that out to people. If they want to call in, that's fine. If you want to keep listening, that's fine, too. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
Why don't you talk just a moment about the book you've written? Because I found it a fascinating, fascinating story, very readable and very believable.
Oh, thank you, Phyllis. I suppose it's basically... It began really with me just keeping a diary, of everything that was happening,
mm-hmm.
because somebody suggested that, you know, it's a way of sort of, I suppose, like venting, you know, your feelings rather than sort of keeping them all you know, bottled up.
Yes.
And it just basically went from there, you know. I just had so much. And then I suppose really that the main motivation was, like I said to you in the beginning, I mean, it took us 12 years to actually finally accept what was really happening to our youngest son, because we spent so much, so many years just looking for other answers, other things, So I suppose that the message I wanted to get across was to other parents to say, you know, look, you know, not every child that is, you know, is saying that they see these things is having a nightmare. I'm not saying that, you know, everybody having a nightmare is being abducted. I mean, that's just ludicrous. But you know, in other words, if your child is coming to you saying, you know, Mom, I'm being taken away, etc., don't just dismiss it like we did, you know, just
or worse, make fun of them or to belittle them. Yes.
Well, exactly. Yes. Just you know, just be more supportive and you know, really sort of as I say, just be open minded and maybe consider it as a possibility, because then you know you'll be well, I suppose, you know, in better position than we were, because you know you will actually sort of, you know, be there for them and really listen to them and hear what they're saying, and you know, it's got to be wonderful. Yeah.
Well, children do have active imaginations, but I believe also there are very, very many talented, gifted people who have been dismissed and who have been sort of made to feel as though they're mentally deficient and who've had to deny themselves and have a lot of issues that way. I've talked to other people. In fact, one lady who is a psychotherapist, and she says there have been many people, and I asked her about this too. I said, have you found that there are people who have been put in mental institutions and who also are kept pretty much drugged, who actually are having experiences with other entities or psychic experiences where they're open to receiving information, et cetera? And they are being drugged because they've been told they're crazy and they are being put under this. And she said, absolutely, yes, I believe that. She said, anytime anybody, she says, not all people who have this are, you know, psychically gifted or being spoken to, as you said, but it's kind of common sense and exploratory. You pursue alternate avenues. I mean, there are some people who are strange, you know, they think that the UFOs are talking to them through their dentures, you know, and I'm sorry, I met somebody who was convinced she was getting all the metal work out of her mouth because she thought that the aliens were programming stuff through her dentures, her fillings.
Oh, okay.
No, it's possible, but honest to goodness, I really wondered. I mean, you know, I mean, if they're going to talk to me, not through my dentures, please, you know, use a radio. Or people who are having dementia, you know, think they're coming through the walls at them. And you know the difference, you know, the difference between common sense and people who have serious health issues. God bless them. And but the common sense thing is to accept it. You know, the sad thing is you can say anything doesn't exist anymore if you want to. I mean, I've met people who try to say that the Jews were never exterminated in Germany, okay? And I've met people who came from the camps when I was a little girl. How can you say that didn't exist, that didn't happen, you know? So there's a lot of self-delusion and a lot of denial in people when they don't want to face something. And personally, I don't know what's so scary about people coming from another world, to be honest with you. I really don't. I mean, they come and go. You have people coming from all around the world. At one time, that was considered a very terrifying thing, to have somebody coming from another country, or like an Asian coming to Europe or something like that. That was considered absolutely bizarre, right?
Yeah.
Way back when? So I don't understand it. They're not here, and what can we do anyway, is the way I look at it. If I'm technically superior, I might as well be friendly with them and hope I can charm them.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a practical aspect of, you know, be nice, play nice, be friends.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, play nicely.
I know if I went to another world, I'd like them to be nice to me and not shoot guns or whatever they have at me. And also, if you do it with a sense of humor, I think that works well too.
Oh, yeah, you definitely need one.
So how are things going now in your life? You were saying that you are yourself beginning to learn things and growing and expanding. This has been for you in a journey, has it not, in growing and expanding in awareness?
Oh, definitely, definitely, yes. I mean, you know, before any of this came into our lives, you know, I was quite content, you know, I was a normal housewife bringing up two young boys. You know, my husband had a 9-to-5 job. We just looked forward to the weekends and to our annual holidays. And that was about as far as, you know, our thinking ever went, really. And, you know, we just never really questioned anything. But I mean, you know, now, you know, it's just, as I say, we're such spiritual people, you know, not in a religious sense at all.
Right.
But just, you know, in the thing about, like, you know, universal consciousness and, you know, sort of, like the earth is a living organism, you know, and just being a real part of nature. I mean, I always had, you know, this love of animals, which I got from my dad. But, you know, it's just now, it just seems to, well, just exploded. It's sort of like, you know, the blinkers have come off in a way, you know, and it's like, well, for me personally, it's like I now look at the world with you know, with different eyes, you know. It's just, it's just wonderful in one way and sad in others, you know. It's, to see it for what it really is and what it could be, you know. It's just very, very different to what, you know, what I was brought up, you know, ideas with.
So you feel that this has been, overall, if you had to look at it, for you, you would say that this experience of contact for yourself and the traveling that you've done and your son has done has been a good positive for you.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, Phyllis, most definitely. Very, very positive experiences. We didn't always see them as that. I mean, obviously,
right,
as Jason was growing up, you know, that there was the absolute fear and terror of what was happening to him. And of course, whilst you know, whenever he had an experience, you know, we would always get all this sort of, like paranormal stuff happening in the house, you know, like, equipment switching itself on and kettle foiling dry and all this sort of thing. And, you know, which seemed to accompany it, which in itself could be, you know, quite frightening.
Sure.
But then, I mean, but looking at the overall picture, you know, it's just that sort of, what, you know, what, 20 odd years down the line, it's,
right,
you know, we sort of look back at it and we think, well, okay, you know, we've had quite a few hiccups and, you know, that there's still a lot that we don't know, you know, that there's still, well, we've got so many questions, but but then on the other hand, you know, we see everything so differently and we appreciate what we've got, you know, we appreciate the planet that we have and, you know, feel that we should do a lot more to take care of her. And it's just, I suppose, an appreciation for everything that we have and, you know, a total sort of, I suppose, new belief system, really, you know, sort of just total belief in the universe and everything it represents.
Well, I think that's very, very positive. And my feeling is that that is what the purpose of this is. It's just to bring us to a greater awareness of our lives and our places in the world, in the universe, and how we can adopt and integrate the expansion of new information, new beginnings, I guess a love of absolute learning, because we don't know everything, and it is a wonderful gift, I think, to be given the opportunity to become more aware, because most of us have a tendency to put blinders on and as you say, just go around, or as I used to say, go around fat, dumb, and happy. Which I have a tendency, like everybody else, to do, you know. I'm not that unique. And it is such a wonderful, wonderful gift that you've given the world and others and parents and people who have experienced this. I think it gives a validation for the experiences that people have gone through. I think it is an awakening for many people and a sort of, you say it in such a non- I have to say goodbye. Thank you very much.
Okay.
It's been a joy having you on. I look forward to continuing talking to you. And I thank you so much for staying up so late. It's 1 a.m., folks, that this lady is up doing this show. So thank you so much. God bless you. And we look forward to talking to you again.